Yo, welcome to the Zillionaires Podcast, where we mainly talk about Seattle-related sports topics and other things as well. I'm your host and moderator, Solo, from Brooklyn.
What up, y'all? This is Chisler from Seattle, Washington. They call me the Wizard of Washington Sports. That means every night I gaze into my crystal ball so I can tell you the future of what's going down.
What's up, guys? This is Krusty from Yakima. I wear my fandom on my sleeve. I get crazy, I get emotional, and I like to throw down ultimatums. Let's have some fun.
Well, this is episode... Four? I can't even believe.
400.
Once again, I'll have to say, I can't believe we made it to four. This is getting, like, ridiculous. I know we're not going to make it to five. Let's just start there. This is definitely Chisler's last one, I can tell.
I'm pretty burnt out.
Yeah. He can't hold. I know how Chisler rolls.
He's been worked to death.
He can hold on to, like, one idea for, like, a couple of minutes, and that's it.
No, it's really that Krusty started getting some limelight. Like, my friends were talking to me, and they were like, oh, yeah, it's great that Krusty's on there. He really provides this certain, you know, brashness that really, you know, you can argue with it. And I was just like, oh, it's about Krusty? I'm out. I thought I was going to take off. I had a nickname. I was the Wizard of Washington Sports. People were going to call me Wiz in the streets.
You blew it in episode two with the ridiculous predictions that you made on the season.
Oh wait, we're not gonna go there yet. We're gonna definitely get to all that. We're still in our intro phase here.
I'm also waiting for the episode where Solo takes over and just says screw it to Krusty and me.
Oh, I already started my own side podcast.
It's a reaction podcast to this podcast.
Yeah. It's called Solo Sports. And I just, like, go off on you guys all day to randos.
That's hilarious.
We already have a backup for you, Chisler, as soon as you bail. Krusty and I have already had some side action.
Oh, no. Okay. So let me put a... I want to get in on the side action. So apparently I won't make it till episode five. So
I'm good for a hundo
on that. I don't think I will.
Come on.
Double up your money and head out.
I don't understand what's so hard about it. You get to talk shit for like an hour about Seattle sports and that's it. And then you just sit back and wait for the limelight to come.
Well, I didn't realize that my once a week friends were going to turn into my three times a week friends.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That is true. I know. It is a little too much crusty.
Nobody's turning to me and saying, "Hey, Chisler, what you're doing on the podcast is really fascinating." It's all about somebody else. So,
anyway. Has anybody actually? I have yet to have anybody talk to me about it. Has anybody talked to you? Because I know Krusty has. He's got like a couple of friends out there.
Yeah, a couple people have been listening to it, and they just said that they like it. I haven't gotten anything specific more than they just think it's fun and funny, and you know, most of them haven't got any fan mail, so that makes it interesting as well. But it's like I said in the other episode, it's been all positive for me. All good. I don't have such critical a-hole friends as you guys.
Well, I don't have any. No, like I said, no one said a word to me because I haven't told anybody about it.
No, it's good, man. Let's do it.
The cool thing is that I actually been paying a little bit more attention. I will have to say, though, I mean, we might as well get into it, that I don't know what it is, but... Is it just me, or is watching the NFL draft one of the most boring things on the planet? I gotta just say it. I gotta put it out there. Like, I mean, I love the NFL, but that whole thing is kind of ridiculous. To sit around and wait for people to talk about who they may or may not pick. And then we know for a fact that most of the guys don't even stick around anyway, right? I know that we kind of had a little back and forth about that, but...
I think
seven,
that
yeah...
The incredible part about the NFL draft to me is how it is the best example of how dominant the NFL is compared to all other sports.
Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind that the NFL draft gets better TV ratings than playoff games in other leagues.
What leagues?
better than NBA playoff games than all. I mean, not all of them. You know, if Celtics, Lakers, or something, they'll get. But if it's
play
like,
the fact checker music solo.
Yeah,
play the fact checker music. He's a random stat that comes out that has no basis in reality.
Definitely better than hockey playoff games. But you look. Let's fact check it, listeners. let me know there, Mister
Wizard. Wait, let's fact check it, listener.
But I'm telling you that the now I will agree that the now when they've spread it out into 3 days or whatever is ridiculous. The fact that it takes hours to do the first round, I would love it. I enjoy the draft because I just think I like the stories. I like to know rookies coming in, know a little bit about them, know for fantasy football who I want to take a rookie gamble on, that kind of stuff. And the draft is kind of our opportunity to get a lot of the information all at once. But I wish that it was one day for the whole thing. You know, just one long day. It should be on, like, the NFL Network for, like, 5 hours for one day, not 3 days. That's ridiculous.
What do you think, Chisler? Did you watch it?
No, I did not watch it. But, yeah, I did get a very inspirational moment out of it, however. So I like the fact that I get to see the players themselves react to getting drafted. That's probably
the best part.
That's like between the phone calls that the Seahawks put up on Seahawks.com and on their mobile app, sponsored by Kombucha.
second episode in a row.
But between those phone calls and these draft day videos of guys just, you know, getting their life changed is the most spectacular moment. So it's almost like if you had the NFL Red Zone channel for the draft and it just showed like the actual moment the pick was, you could get through it all in about 10 minutes and it would be perfect.
Yeah.
I'll have to say, I watched this show on ESPN. I think it was called like Rookies First or something about rookies. And it was like they followed four of the drafts. Four of the highest picks or whatever, they all went in the first round.
Yeah,
went in the second.
A little backstory.
That was actually, that was a good show. It was actually much more interesting to watch that than the actual draft. I mean, just obviously, like when guys know that they're going to be picked in the first 3-5 picks or whatever, they knew it was a really big deal. I mean, they had like guys come in and put on suits for them, and they were like, they had multiple outfits. Like it was a way big deal. And that was exciting. Cause I was thinking, man, if I was 22 years old or however they are, 21, 22, you got your whole life ahead of you and you worked your whole life to that moment. And then you're sitting in there and you're like, you know, you're going to get like $1 million contracts like right away. That would be pretty exciting. And the show was exciting and they really did a good job building it up. Because it was a two-part special. It was like 2 hours in a row. I watched them back to back.
And honestly, cool. these guys have different backgrounds than a lot of us. So it's So it's pretty interesting look into a different childhood and all that. So it's pretty cool.
Who was the first pick? Sure. What's his name? It was a defensive player, right? First pick.
Yeah, Myles Garrett.
Myles Garrett. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked that guy, Tack McKinley's story, man. That just blew me up. Like, he went up there with this picture of his grandma who he said she was in the hospital or something, and he said he made a promise to her 30 seconds before she passed away that he would chase his dream of going into the NFL because she wanted him to. And
and he's from Oakland, right? He was going to get out of Oakland.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then he just like lost it.
And then he dropped
it.
About 47 F-bombs.
He lost it on the stage. Yes. He said, get to the goddamn quarterback. And he said, like, I'm going to, F and find me. I don't care or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just
he was
totally raw.
Yeah.
Totally raw.
Yeah.
As raw as it gets. It was so freaking unbelievable. If he can harness that. Like,
yeah, it makes you a little bit nervous that he's too emotional of a player but that's a big moment. That's a big moment. That's the type of guy who gets a lot of penalties, though, potentially, but maybe not.
Oh, my God. To even put any football stamp on it is amazing. But he's just talking about his grandma who died.
And
His parents,
amazing
like,
emotion.
Abandoned him at 4 years old, and he didn't even have his parents. So it was a nutty story.
All right, well, let's get into it. What do you guys think? Malik McDowell, first pick for the Seattle Seahawks.
Malik.
So, Malik.
I want to say this before we, and we can jump into the individual guys, which I'm down with doing that. Some of them I don't think are, we don't need to get into much, but I'll say this. When the draft was happening, I was pretty frustrated. My overall opinion at the end of the draft was negative. I was really disappointed.
We all thought that.
But we were all a little hurt. After marinating on this draft a little bit, I had a few thoughts to myself, and I actually went back and looked at the 2011 and 2012 drafts. And I know Chisler loves for me to just get over those drafts and forget they ever happened.
No, I just want you to remember those are the only good ones.
I wanted to go back and remind myself and deeply think about what did I actually think coming out of those two drafts. And I can tell you that the 2012 draft, I hated. I hated that draft. That was Bruce Irvin in the first round that every single person on planet Earth said was like the biggest reach in the draft that year. And everybody was pissed off. Everybody was pissed off. And so I have no idea what his point is. So now having done that experience and then marinated on this draft, I'm going to say I think this is the best draft Pete Carroll's ever had. I think we're going to look back and say that this is the best draft they've ever had.
That is a strong
Here's the three reasons I say why.
Is this like the flippiest flop? Am I watching HGTV and this is like Krusty's flipper flop?
I told you guys this was going to be a little unexpected take. So here's the thing. I think what made them so good in some of those early drafts, or what ended up being good, wasn't worrying about like where guys were supposed to be drafted. They've really never worried about that. But what it was is that those early drafts are where they went the biggest, fastest, most athletic. They went with guys who were just super freak athletes, instead of any position stuff. And they really did it like very purposefully in those drafts. And in this draft, I think that's what they did again. They took guys that were super freak fast, super athletes, and didn't care where their needs were as much or whatever. Like, they still got a corner, and he could end up being better than Kevin King or the guys that I wish they would have drafted earlier, or he might not. But they took speed, depth. I think they might have drafted the next Legion of Boom. I think if those two of those three or four guys they just took click, then you could be replacing one of, you know, Earl or Cam and a corner and still have Richard at the end of his career. I mean, you might be looking at the next phase of the Legion of Boom. Maybe not. But you have to keep in mind. Richard didn't start. Cam didn't start. Bobby Wagner didn't start.
This is KJ what Wright drives me crazy, that right there. Okay, so you are back to pledging allegiance to Pete and John with 100% fervor behind it, saying this is the number one draft they've ever had.
I think it will end up that way.
Wow.
But it might not look like it this year. What I'm saying is that the 2011-2012 drafts didn't look good until about 2 or 3 years later, because none of those guys started their first year.
Okay. So what about the point?
2 or 3 years, we might say that this draft was even better than those drafts.
We have to wait that long for sure. The point that seems like you glossed over was that they've been drafting for athleticism every single year since 2011 and 2012, and they didn't do anything different that year that they aren't doing these other years. If you look on the Spark charts, they went through the whole Spark thing and were drafting guys that were just off the charts as far as that, but maybe didn't have experience, and now they've even moved past that. It looks like, from that one Hawk Blogger article I sent you all, that there's this like amalgamation stat that's Spark plus body type, and that the guys that they ended up drafting in the 7th and later rounds are all fit the number one dude in that new amalgamated stat of spark plus body type. So I think they're totally still drafting for mega athleticism, and they have been all along, and they just haven't hit on it. So I hope that they're right. You know, I hope that you're right.
I agree that that's been their plan. What I mean is I think they hit on it more this time. Like I think they hit on good guys that are those top spark guys, but also happen to be good football players, like in the right positions for the most part, except for the center that they took, and we don't need a center. Other than that, they really took guys in the positions that make sense for where they play, and, you know, for the most part. And so I like that. Anyway, I will see, like I said, looking back with that article you sent us, I think the problem with looking at some of their drafts is the fact of how bad they've been drafting offensive line. It just blows up all the statistics of their drafts. Like, they're terrible at drafting offensive linemen, and they always have been. And so that's why I wanted corners more than offensive linemen, because they draft good corners and they don't draft good offensive linemen. So I was frustrated to see an offensive lineman go before a corner.
Yeah, and I was more into like seeing an offensive line. Yeah, I wanted an O-line. I know that you keep saying that we need defense, but that's like, for having one of the best defenses in the league, it's a really weird thing to say.
But the problem is that when your defense is why you're good, you have to keep it good. You have to do a lot to stay the best defense. And they are obvious. What this draft told us, in my opinion, what this draft told us is that they are concerned with staying the number one defense more than becoming a better offense.
Well, I would say it mostly said that they knew this draft was deep in that position, and they draft for deepness in draft. I mean, or they plot their board out towards that. I definitely think we've learned that over the years. Like, they look at where drop-offs are in drafts, and they put a lot of attention towards hitting guys before that drop-off, and they definitely did that with the defensive backfield this year.
All right. Well, what do you guys think of Malik McDowell as the first pick?
I hated it. I still hate it.
Yeah.
I don't think that they need. Yeah, I think that set their whole draft off. In some ways, they got four picks out of it, but and I think they missed on guys that would have fit in perfectly into the system without having to be moved around or prove it's or whatever. I just feel like to have a good draft for the Seahawks now, they have to get one or two guys out of it that are going to be amazing. And this strategy of just picking a bunch of picks, getting a bunch of picks, doesn't mean you get amazing guys. It means you get a bunch of guys that have boom or bust potential.
I do think Malik McDowell is going to be big time, though.
I do. Oh, okay. Well, that's opposite of what Chisler just said. So that's
good. Here's why. When you look at the Seahawks, when they've been at their very best defensively, is when they had a truckload of defensive linemen and they kept them super fresh. They rotated them like crazy, and they attacked and they attacked and they attacked. The quarterbacks that have been able to beat us up lately are the quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins and Rodgers and those guys that can like step up in the pocket when we have that end pressure. Well,
we're
going to ask this guy to do is pass rush from the middle. So you're going to be able to put Michael Bennett and this dude in the middle, take Ruben out, who is a run stopper, or take Jaron Reed out, who is a run stopper, and put these two dudes in, and then have Cliff Averill and somebody else on the edge. And I think you have four dudes who can legit rush the pass. I think you're going to see a lot more interior pass rush.
That was my text to you guys.
But he's not going to have to play that many snaps. Like, he's going to only play like 15 snaps a game, but he might get two sacks.
Let's fact check that one.
I'm telling you, because if you look back when they were really rolling those guys.
Who wants Mike Bennett off the field for 15 snaps? Raise their hand.
No,
not
Mike
me.
Bennett won't
their inside pass rusher. And
Mike Bennett won't come on. No, they use two inside pass rushers.
Well, here's the deal. Don't we have, like, Cassius Marsh who can, like, do some of that stuff already?
He's an end. That's who goes on the end when...
He's fast on the end, though, so we can just, we got packages. I don't know if it was worth a number one pick. It screwed up the whole rest of the draft. It made them change from having, like... They should have gone for more round two picks. The drop off was crazy in round two.
So they interviewed a GM, an ex-GM, who is a regular contributor on KJR 950 Sports Radio. And they interviewed him, and they said that, or he said that he had Malik McDowell as his 10th best defensive player in the country. He said that he thinks it's the best pick of the draft. Of the whole draft, any round. He loved him. And
where'd you find this?
And so did, what's the ex-Husky quarterback who's on there all the time? Anyway.
Warren Moon?
No, Hugh Millen. Hugh Millen is on there all the time, and he liked him a lot, too. I don't know. I don't know enough about him. I think he's just not going to have to play all that much. But when he does, I think he's going to be a really successful pass rusher.
You bring up that Bruce Irvin pick. Man, that Bruce Irvin pick didn't pan out.
Bruce Irvin was a stud when he left the Seahawks. Are you kidding me? Bruce Irvin was a fantastic linebacker when he left the Seahawks.
Well, he was, but they moved him from end to linebacker.
You are talking about, Chisler, you are talking to a guy whose favorite player of all time was Walter Jones.
All right. So, go on. I'll drop it. All right.
So, let's just say the center. Let's just do the first couple of picks.
I want to actually combat his, main point, which is,
do that.
In Pete and John, we trust, okay? I am a diehard Seahawk fan, but honestly, I'm over the in Pete and John we trust on this stuff now. I'm like Richard Sherman. I'm not buying in as much anymore. Okay, on this draft particularly, they had options that seemingly could have been played much differently, and I think their strategy of just going after bulk amount of picks hasn't panned out since 2011, 2012, and they just go to the same strategy over and over again. I really think it boils down to you only need one or two amazing guys to hit and be fit into your system, and you don't need 25 picks in order to do that. And what you end up doing is getting more middle of the road picks where you have less of a there's a huge amount of boom or bust in all these dudes, and I just think that strategy of boom or bust it's time to modify it.
Okay. I feel you, and most of that was probably very factual, although you know I don't like facts. So what I will say to that is that is true from the perspective of a fan who has recently won a Super Bowl and been to two and was amazing last year and in the playoffs deep. This is a wildly successful team doing it that way. The way they have drafted since 2011, 2012 has made them if not the most successful team in the NFL. So I think it's hard to criticize them because of that success. But I will say that, yes, they get a lot of players that don't work out. But so do all teams who pick high, good first-round draft picks or whatever. They still have lots of players that don't pan out, too.
That is true. I think it's really hard. I know you own that crystal ball, Chisler. So,
dude, you guys, I look into that thing every night so I can tell you the future of what's going on. And I'm telling you, the future of what's going on is that the same team that they or the same strategies that they needed to build it the first time around in Seattle are not the same strategies they can use the second time to build it. That's all I'm arguing against.
All right. Well, let's move on.
I think it could have to change a little, but I disagree. And it's not that in Pete and John I trust solely. I'll criticize them on what they do and picks and stuff. But I think that
the first day, three days later, you'll be totally,
The other time smooching that they took, the only time that you wouldn't have this same criticism, we've been pissed at every one of their drafts except for taking Earl Thomas in the first round, that was the only time they've really taken that top guy and not traded it or got, you know what I mean? Feel like that we've had the same opinion among almost every single one of their drafts, and yet we've been to two Super Bowls and many NFC championship games. You know what I mean? I guess unless you're the
definitely
Patriots,
on the draft, definitely because of those dudes from 2011 and 2012.
No,
though.
It's not either. A lot of those
oh my god. You're telling me it's all because of Deshaun Shedd?
No, but I'm telling you that four or five guys don't win a football Super Bowl by themselves.
He's telling you because of Max Unger, dude. His second
no,
favorite
it's
player
Walter
of all time.
Jones, yeah. No, that's why.
Right,
he
let's
was.
Let's move on.
No, I have
every
another controversial opinion.
Player, he like wants to move on.
God.
I have another right, controversial well, opinion then. Okay, if it's in Pete and John we trust, okay. Guess who's not a part of that? Tom Cable. I do not trust Tom Cable anymore. If I have any amount of trust for anybody, it's Pete. more than John, even. But Tom Cable is not a part of the trust circle.
Yeah, it's tough because it's hard to balance the, is he making a nice omelet out of 14-week-old duck eggs, or, and that's incredible and impressive and it's amazing that he can make something edible out of this rotten product because they're so bad, or is it that he's given perfectly great eggs and he just makes a mediocre omelet that never gets any fancier no matter how many times he makes it? It's starting to look like the latter, for sure. I mean, it's starting to seem like guys just don't grow under him very much. They just don't.
Krusty, that was quite poetic of you. You should write songs.
You know, the whole time I was thinking he should have said, was that Tom Cable likes pizza, but does he make pizza rolls or does he make Totino's? Yeah,
I'm hungry.
Perfect.
Food oriented.
That was a good metaphor, though. I did like it.
Yeah.
Let's go on to round two. Ethan, the center. Ethan Pocic. Posick, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He won't play center, though. Like you were saying, like, right? It's like, why do we always draft guys? And they just like, well, we'll move him over here and see how he does. Let's get a guy from the NBA and see how he is.
Yeah,
let's get a guy from the NHL and see how he is.
Let's see if we can get. He's athletic and quick, and he likes me.
Michael Phelps won a lot of gold medals. Maybe he can play center.
Exactly. This is definitely the pick where I will be critical. And they've been good in the second round, but not on. They've just never been good at offensive line. And I feel like part of it is this. Like, can we just please draft a guy that plays the position we actually play?
Yeah.
Can we just do that? Like, part of me almost wants to move Justin Britt to guard again or something just to see one goddamn rookie play the position that he actually played. I mean, I've heard some dudes write articles and stuff on the radio, sports radio, of him playing left tackle. And my question to you, the most important position in football, if you're good enough to be left tackle, then why the hell weren't you left tackle in college? Like, we're going to take a guy that wasn't good enough to play left tackle in college and have him be left tackle in the NFL. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, maybe the team he played for had a really, really horrible left tackle or a little better one, but they had an even worse center. You know, college is kind of funny like that.
I guess.
I mean, it's like, you know, your best athlete, I mean, maybe college is a little bit different than high school, but in high school, your best athlete on the football team, no matter what he becomes in the NFL, is usually the quarterback, right? Or the running back. And then when they go to the NFL, they end up being corner or safety or something. But
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And maybe this is where he brings it back to the athleticism. They're drafting based off of, like, talent and what they see and drive and dedication and character even. Like, you know, maybe they know a lot more than we do. Is that possible?
Oh, it's almost assured. It's almost assured. I will say that
they actually meet these people, right, yeah, and talk to them.
I mean, I will say that everything I've seen and heard is that he was a really good center. You know, he was a good offensive lineman.
Here's the crazy thing. He's taller and longer than Justin Britt. And Russell isn't getting any taller either. So now we're just like sticking Russell behind this 6'7" guy. And we've already had this whole thing where this guy last year was stepping on Russell's foot, which cost us basically one game, if I remember correctly. But anyway, well, it just seems odd that we're putting guys that are taller in front of Russell.
Yeah, he's not gonna play center, but But remember that the average height.
They're going to play him at center at the beginning. They said already.
No, he won't play center.
In training camp.
Well, he might compete with Britt, I guess. But if they move Britt out of the only position that he's ever been good at, then I will freak out. I will
get ready to freak out, dude.
Britt out of center.
Get ready to freak out.
But here, but keep in mind that Russell Wilson's offensive line at Wisconsin had an average height of 6'7". He played behind a 6'9" dude at guard.
This is another fun fact that is definitely not true.
It is true. And here's how I can know that.
They averaged solo 6'7", average. So there was one guy who was 7'3" and another guy who was 6', and they averaged 6'7".
I went back and listened today to the John Gruden quarterback camp with Russell Wilson because we mentioned it the other day, and it made me think back fondly of it. So I went back and watched it, and they talked about that exact thing.
Wow. All right. Well, you did your research.
6'7", 6'8", 6'7", 6'9", 6'6". Like,
okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. All right. I just don't think it's an issue for him, dude. The height thing is BS. He's proven. He won a Super Bowl. I don't care about that crap anymore. Russell Wilson is like top four quarterback in the NFL. I don't care about the height of his.
What do you think of this corner, Shaquille Griffin?
Well, now that's what the whole draft comes down to, that he's the guy. He has to be dope. Like
he's going to start.
Because they justify. Now, if he's good. Yes. If he's the I can see where you're corner, going with this. If he's the starting corner next year and is good and has a good year and all that jazz, and it frees you up to move Jeremy Lane to nickel or one of these other rookie safeties to nickel or whoever wins that nickel battle.
Then the trade downs good. Make sense. Yeah.
But if that happens, then Malik McDowell and the Pocic are just gravy, are just icing on the cake. They're like free picks. Because if that guy is good, then that's what I wanted them when the first round or second
was
round
a corner.
To take a superstar corner. That's what they needed. Who could start next to Richard Sherman from day one. So if
it will be interesting if another corner, though, dominates on a different team that was picked before him. We'd also have to judge that.
Oh, of course. He has to be. He's always going to be compared to Kevin King and those other few guys that went before him, for sure. Yes. He's always going to be compared to them. But I would argue that if he's good and the Seahawks win, then does it matter?
If he's good, then
they got him and those two other guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And if they got him and they win, and they got a value that was, you know, so much better than the value of those other guys that went before them. They also played the draft well, you know?
Yeah, they pay him less. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he is the linchpin. I mean, him or one of the other guys. I mean, the safeties they took. Somebody has to hit as that opposite corner from this draft. Somebody has to. Or else this is a terrible draft. So when I say that I think this is going to be the best draft, it's because I believe in that Shaq kid. I think he's going to be really good.
Okay, so you believe it's the best draft until it's not, and then it's not.
No, I think it is. I'm just telling you how it won't be. If it's not, it's going to be a terrible draft. It's because that Shaq kid is terrible. If he's terrible, then this whole draft is a bust, probably. But if he's as good as I think he's going to be, and that Malik dude is as good as I think he's going to be, then this draft is going to be amazing because their defense is going to be fire.
What about Nazaire Jones?
I don't know. I just don't know what to think of him. I could see him being a contributor. I could see him not making the team.
So who do you think? Okay, so basically you're saying Shaquille Griffin is the one.
For me, I think so. But we'll see. I mean,
I think Tedrick Thompson could be, or Tedrick, what was his last name?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tedrick Thompson.
He could be decent. I like his passion. Chris Carson, you mentioned him, Krusty, in text. His spark plus athletic body type numbers are like 95th percentile. So apparently he's just like a super freak of an athlete. And I think they're banking on that.
We talked a little bit about like the one or two guys out of the draft that you're rooting for the most. So obviously I'm rooting for Shaq because I think it's the linchpin of the whole draft. But I would say otherwise, like unheralded guys or guys who have a shot at not making the team, maybe. I am rooting for Chris Carson. I love this dude. I think this dude has Pete Carroll written all over him. He's a running back, played for the Oklahoma State, and he ran for 600, almost 600 yards in 9 games. Just a hammer. He's not very elusive, but he is a Marshawn Lynch style, like power, like run over people back that I think in the future with CJ Procise could be pretty awesome. Right. Now, he did play in the Big 12, which has had the worst defense of any conference in America, probably. They were like called the no defense conference. So that's part of it. But I just, Pete loves him. Pete said he was one of his favorite players in the draft. And I think he's why Alex Collins is gone. I think he beats out Alex Collins, and Alex Collins and Pope are both toast. They're not on the team anymore.
Well, you definitely are in Pete. And John, you trust, so that does go along with your whole theme here for today's podcast. The last pick they chose is your favorite pick.
It's Pete's favorite pick, and it's therefore my favorite pick. It's really tough to go out on a limb against Pete, isn't it? There,
NFL rookies after the draft are like opening day of baseball, right? Like, nobody's lost yet. Like, everything, like, we're going to the World Series, baby.
This would have been a way more interesting podcast had we gotten Krusty on day one of his meltdown after the draft. Now he's all healed up. He's got stitches and he's all been to the doctor. And now he's all patched up and got his smiley face on. Well, come on, dude. Get back into the trenches with me, dude. In the trenches, Pete and John blew this one. And they basically just drafted a bunch of backups that are never going to get into the league. That's kind of what I feel like happened. And he said it himself, too. Pete said it. He said they could have the best backups in the league this year. And it's like, okay, well, will you be able to keep them around for 2 or 3 years before your main dudes all decide to quit together? Which I'm still banking on that theory, by the way. As soon as Earl or Cam or Richard leaves the team, I say 5 dudes go all at once in one season, which is add Mike Bennett and Cliff Averill to that list. As soon as one guy goes, they all go. But yeah, so
okay, so here I think I can bring it together where we're almost on the same page. Actually, here
I don't want to be on the same page with you, dude.
Because here's what I'm going to say. He said that they are going to have the best backups, but you know when else they have the best backups? When Cam was a backup and Sherman was a backup and Bobby was a backup and KJ was a backup, those guys were all backups. None of those guys started year one. Sherman was on third on the depth chart when he walked onto the field for the first time. 2 dudes had to go down and get hurt. I'm telling you that they're backups, but they're the next Legion of Boom. When those guys leave, Tedrick Thompson, Shaq, those guys are going to take over and be the superstars.
Okay, so last word. Come on. Quit letting him jump in.
All right. Well, I'm trying to say, look, you guys, I'm loving this draft talk because, like I said, I already brought up how bored I was. So I turned off about halfway through the first day, and I'm just letting you guys talk.
Oh, man.
Matter of fact, I've got the website up here just looking at the picks because I gave up after Malik McDowell. I was done. I was like, what? Like, I don't get it. So either way, I'm happy that you guys are really into it and you're having your own back and forth on this right now.
I will say, here's the very last thing I'll say. I know I've talked too much already on this, so I have no more draft talk for me. Last two things. One is cool pattern.
Two things or one thing?
One thing with two parts. but one interesting thing that you see is 2 picks from Michigan. And I think we're going to see that every year from them almost. I think you could slot a Michigan player onto Pete's team almost every year if they can get them. Because he talked a lot about how he likes how Harbaugh coaches kids and it fits their style. Like Harbaugh plays the same type of football that the Seahawks do. And there's so much of college football that is like spread out, wide, throw it, no huddle, bullcrap now. That these people, the kids that come out of Michigan. So I would look for that. It was a wide receiver and a strong safety. And I would look for those guys to potentially have a good shot at making the team just from that concept, that they might be better coached than some of the other guys coming in. And then, that's it. That's it, actually.
That's your point. All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of backups and what you were talking about, I want to transition into the Mariners right now because this is I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a minute because
they're back at 500. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Back it up.
I mean, They're in second place right now in their division. Let me just bring this up. The beginning of the season, you were like, I'm like, hey, check it out. They're going to win this game. And you're like, who cares? And I'm like, well, let's just watch. You're like, I don't care because they don't make the playoffs every year. They just break your heart, which is okay. True. I get that. But my question is, do you just sit around and be like a curmudgeon every season until they win? I don't really understand your logic behind this. Please explain to me how you feel about this again.
I haven't expressed it correctly, and I realize that my I don't care doesn't mean I don't care about them or them playing. Like, no, I enjoy watching the games. I'm like, yes, win. I like great hits. I love the kind of weird charisma that's on this team right now. I have been pleasantly shocked to see them survive some injuries of pitchers and to kind of really overcome some of adversity. What I mean when I say I don't care is it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any value. None of these wins have value to me anymore. Now, I will still enjoy watching baseball. I'm still rooting for my team. But I don't care how many games they win. If they don't make the playoffs, every single one of those games was pointless.
I've been on this roller coaster before, and I feel like I'm not going on this ride again.
I understand that, Krusty. Like, what I mean is...
But I still enjoy watching the games. I'm not rooting for them to lose. I'm not sitting there being cranky. Like,
you're watching a lot of games for how much you're hating.
Yeah, for not caring, you're definitely watching a lot and then texting me about it every day.
No, because I'm not saying I don't care about the teams. I said I'm not valuing these wins. I'm not going to get excited. Like, you just texted me and said, hey, we're at number two. Are you ready to eat your words? And I said, yeah, we're in number two a month into the season in the second worst division in baseball. Big deal.
But look, I'll tell
you
what,
though. He's the numb fan. He's totally numb to anything. He's just
I get that, too. And
along.
I do get that. I'm just saying, like, that's just, like, a really pessimistic view. I'm saying when you were like, hey, I don't care. If they were in last place right now and they were, like, 16 games back, I'd be like, yeah, you're right. They suck. But they're, like, in second place and you were, like, hating so hard in the beginning of the season. And I'm like, let's just give them a chance here. Can we at least see how it unfolds? Because at least they're, like, playing baseball that I can watch. I'll bring it back to, like, the first episode or second one we had where I brought up for years, I didn't even watch. I would get MLB.TV every year because living on the East Coast, obviously they don't play any games out here. And I would pay for the subscription for 1 month. I would never pay for the whole season knowing that like this could all fall apart. And yeah, it would last about a month. And that'd be it. I'd be like, oh, it's like, come on. There's like nothing coming back from this. They're already down. Like, they're in last place. They're like 15 back. They're not coming. They're not going to make it anywhere. That's how it's been for pretty much the last 15 years. The last couple of years, though, I've been actually able to watch through the end of the season. That's what makes me excited right now. Plus, we have a lineup that's actually hitting the ball. We haven't had anybody actually getting any hits and for years. Like, just like... what, average 200? I don't even know. I don't want to say it. I don't want to fact check this, but our lineup has never hit anywhere near 250 in the last 10, 15 years. Now we got guys actually hitting. I love Ben Gamel replacing Haniger right now.
He's super fun.
And Taylor Motter. I mean, we got these bearded, long-haired dudes. Like, they look the look-alike, and they're, like, stepping up. I mean... I really like the way Ben Gamel looks. Now, is he really going to last? I don't know. But I'm saying for right now, we do have a team that's worth talking about and watching at least.
It's amazing on top of all these catastrophic injuries, really.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous. There's something to hang on to still. So it's in a way, this is adding some flavor, some interesting spice to the season to get Krusty out of his numb hole. You know, like, you can totally see now that there's, like, some character to these guys who are fighting through this crazy time. There's no way they should be getting games back, you know, and moving up in the rankings right now when they should be falling down further and further because they should be melting down, you know, but they're not.
No. And what's exciting is that, like, first of all, it's, to me... they're actually hitting the ball and getting guys on base and scoring runs. I mean, that is huge. That is so hard to do in Major League Baseball, and they're doing it now. In years past, and I mean like 20 years ago, yeah, we scored a lot of runs, and we didn't have a bullpen. Nowadays, like since they've actually, I feel like since they have moved to Safeco Field, which is what 20 years ago anyway, now it has been a lot harder for them to score in that ballpark because it's just huge, and a lot of guys can't, you know, they're not hitting the ball out of the park like they used to. I feel like right now the fact that these guys are getting on base, they're stealing, they're scoring is exciting to watch. And all we have to now do is just stop them from scoring a few runs. And the bullpen's been holding up the last week. I mean, that's why they've been winning. Although they did get 9 runs scored on the other night, but they still won.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to watch them, to watch those kinds of games where they're winning in double digit, you know, runs to win the game.
I mean, in Safeco, too.
Yeah, it's not been like that, that's for sure, yeah.
I mean, scoring in Safeco is hard. I mean, isn't that basically why Ken Griffey left? I mean, why all those guys left after they were huge? It's like, once they moved there, they're like, wait a minute, I can't hit it out of this park anymore. Like, Kingdom, when they were hitting them out every other at-bat.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a big ballpark. It's outdoors. It's humid. I mean, it's hard to hit it out of there, and guys just can't score in that park.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's exciting to me. I mean, we get our lineup right now is so fun to watch. It's like every night I'm like, oh, it reminds me of what it was like to watch it in the 90s a little bit. And right now I'm having that excitement when I'm like, oh, he's up now. This guy's up. Oh, this is exciting. They're getting guys on base. They're coming back now. Like, I haven't had this much fun watching baseball in many, many years.
See, and that's again, I'm not expressing myself in the right way on this. Again, I enjoy the team. I enjoy baseball. I like
watching circular them. Logic.
I'm trying to blast it right
now. You guys just aren't listening to me.
I am listening. Christy, we've got your opinion. It's. I've written it in stone over here. I've chiseled it all out. It's like chiseled you. Your opinion on his
chiseler pad.
The games have no value, but you're still a fan. You still love the team.
Unless they have no value unless we make the playoffs. Unless it actually means something for once.
Okay, well.
That doesn't mean I'm not going to watch. See,
it's
the difference
a
is,
fabulous
the difference
opinion,
is
Preston.
That I watch roughly the same amount of games every year, no matter how bad they are. Like, I like base. I watch it. So, for me, I don't tune out when it's bad. I just have to watch bad baseball, which is shitty. And so, I'm just sick. I just wins don't get me as excited because if I just you say I'm pessimistic, I say they've earned it.
Let me say this though: in baseball, man, every win counts. It's last year they didn't make the playoffs by one win, right? I mean, truly, every win counts in baseball. Like basketball, you can make the playoffs, whatever, and like every team goes to the playoffs. Hockey, every team goes practically. But baseball, it's like you got to win your division. I mean, it's not that easy to get to the playoffs
more.
In baseball.
I can't disagree more. There's 160 something games or whatever,
and they like, all count. That's the messed up part about it.
That drives me crazy.
Like the NFL, then they all count. Like,
well,
because,
definitely NFL counts.
There's an old baseball adage the other way around. When you're still 10 games out, or they lose a game, it's always like, oh, it's too early. Don't worry about it. Like. The year's so long, like, it doesn't even matter till the All-Star break, blah, 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 blah. Like, you hear that every single year in baseball. Every single year.
It's a different sport, though, than football. I mean, I know what you're saying, but they say that in football when after the first 3 games, they lose 3, like, oh, it's over. And they're like, look, it's a long season. There's a lot of games left. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, I'm just saying, yeah, I'm saying it does matter that they make these, that they win these games because this could actually make the difference at the very end of the season. That's all I'm trying to say. I know, like, okay, yeah, they won. I'm going to be still upset though. I don't care. I hate the team until they win the World Series. I don't give a fuck. Is what you're saying.
No, wait. You got him all wrong. Yeah. Let him explain it again.
But let's move on. The one listener doesn't want to hear me go on this anymore.
All right, okay, listen to it real quick. We got a couple more minutes left. Let's bring it back to the Seahawks.
Okay, do you guys, I have a little something to interject.
All right, let's do this.
Okay. Who does the shopping in your house? Do you ever go do the toilet paper shopping?
Yeah, definitely. I go to the Dollar Tree, boom, right across the street.
Oh, man, gotta get the high-end grade toilet paper, dude.
Well, you know what? That's what I say, too. You know what? I'm with you on that. And they sell actually good toilet paper over there. They don't sing that. They don't sell that single ply. It's doubled up. Right. It's nice. Yeah.
That's point number one that I have to bring up, which is, I don't know if they do this out there, but out here you get taxed 5 cents for every plastic shopping bag you use in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I know there was talk in New York of taxing people for buying soda.
They try to do that.
If there's anything that deserves an insane amount of litigation and taxation, it's single ply toilet paper. That stuff should be off the market. I got caught in a public restroom with that the other day, and I have to say,
man, I'm not a fan of single ply at all. Every time I go home, my parents use that. Like an old person
thing. That is an old person thing. I feel if I go to a business, if I go to like a restaurant and go in and they have that like see-through single ply, I'll never go back. Like that thing alone will make it so I don't go to your business again.
Let me ask you this. Single ply over the like real cardboardy thick stuff.
If it's like paper towel, I don't like that either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But would you rather go single ply or paper towel?
I'd probably build up from single ply because you can basically make 8-ply out of single ply.
Yeah.
But I don't also want to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you're at the grocery store, have you noticed this too? One roll now equals 5 to 6 to 9 to 10 rolls in one bag or one, thing. It'll say 4 rolls now equals 24 rolls. I'm like, have we reached peak toilet paper size yet? You take that thing home and you put it on your toilet paper dispenser and it doesn't even fit in the wall socket. It won't turn. It'll just rip off one square at a time. It's out of control. Can we go back to one roll equals like a roll?
You need to step up your game, son. You need to go get one of those like airport dispensaries on the side.
Yeah. Solo just goes on the road just to have good TP.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know what? I actually know guys. Are you guys into those wipes? Little like toilet.
Dude, they're a much better experience, I will say.
There was a time in my life when I was traveling with those things, because
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you don't even know the half the situations I gotta be in.
A couple days of
being on the road all the time, so I was like, trench butt.
Trench butt.
At one point, I was like, and I would be telling everybody about it, because how I am, I was just like, oh, yeah, I got my wipes. And they were like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. But then, one guy told me on the road, he was like, oh, man, you can't use that stuff. It clogs up all the sewage systems.
Oh, well, you don't flush it. Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I was thinking, is that my problem, though? I don't think that's my problem. I think that's the sewage system's problem.
Oh, come on. Oh, man.
Tragedy
of the commons.
It's going to be a problem when you roll into a toilet and have to go real bad, and the guy before you was using them, and it's all clogged up.
Tragedy of the commons, dude. That's like, it's not my fault unless we all do the wrong thing, and then we all do it. Which is where it all goes.
That is true. I mean, we could end it on this note, actually.
Well, I got one last thought regarding this stuff,
Last thoughts by Chisler.
I have one more thing, too, after that.
Oh, no. Yeah, let's end it on Chisler this time. I'm sick of
Krusty.
Okay, let's go.
I'm kidding.
No, let's hear Krusty, Chisler, and then I get to do my last thought.
No, is yours still grocery store, Chisler?
Well, it's poop related, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, let's keep going.
Yeah, toilet paper, poop. Okay, so
speaking of the Mariners, let's keep going.
Yeah. While I was in deep thought about all these issues regarding being on the toilet, I was thinking about my dog. My dog is supposedly this unevolved or less evolved creature than humans. And most people would say that about every species in the animal kingdom. Yet, when it comes to number two, what species is buying toilet paper, spending a bunch of money cleaning their own butt, doing all this effort, when a dog can just walk outside, squeeze out the most nasty, heinous thing, and not need a single wipe when it is done?
Oh, they need a wipe, dude. Let me tell you something. That's actually a good point that you brought that up.
They even have a bunch of hair right around the hole.
Let me tell you this. We have the least efficient poop system of, like, every creature ever created.
Our butt cheeks are designed totally the wrong way. They just, they totally grip it when they should be letting it go.
They don't have thumbs, dude. They can't grab things to clean it.
Well, I would much rather have
neighbor dog buddy's noses for.
Dude, you sound like Krusty talking about the Mariners. You can't have it all. Okay?
I would rather have paws and not have to use toilet paper than to have toilet paper and opposable thumbs.
Let me tell you this. It's good that you have a dog that you take outside, because tonight we have a cat in here. And I was like eating my dinner in the kitchen. And I'm just like, yeah. Eating this like awesome pasta dish that Holly made. And I was like, this is so good. And at one point I was like, man, it kind of smells like shit in here. But I was like, nah, maybe that's just the way the, like, pasta in the, like, the cheese is melting on there. And I'm just kind of like, nah. But I'm like, man, it still smells like kind of like kitty litter and shit. But I'm like, and I'm looking at the box. I'm like, well, it is right here in the kitchen. But we keep that clean. It's, like, empty twice a day. It's super clean. Yeah. We don't, like, let that go. And I just emptied it. I mean, we do it all day. It's, like, nonstop. I'm just constantly taking little bags of shit downstairs. I just carry it down there. So, anyway, I'm, like, eating. And at one point, I look down to my right, which is, like, 3 feet away from me. And Laser is the name of the cat. He's sitting there playing with a little piece of his shit. He's, like, he's pawing it, like, kicking it around on the fucking floor. And I was just like, dude, this is ridiculous. Like, why is a cat, like, why do animals get to play with their own shit and just be cool with it? Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't do that.
It doesn't stick to them, dude. That's the whole point. It's like,
and then he just cruised off.
Shit.
And then he just walked off like it was ain't no thing. Like, while I'm eating my dinner. And I was like, dude, you're a gross cat.
Yeah, pets,
oh, I didn't pick it
pets
up.
Pets I've us trained, I'm telling you.
I just thought that was whack. And, like, the fact that we have these animals that we got to deal with their shit all the time is ridiculous. That's all I got to say about that. What about your shit story? What do you got?
No Krusty? Shit story for me. I'm getting into a Krusty beer rant. So I'm a big freak about, and that, actually this also involves kombucha. So I know they're apparently a sponsor of the
third
show.
Third time we've mentioned that.
Brought to you by kombucha.
But there is a new fad out here anyway. I don't know if this is happening out there by you, Solo. But out here, there are many, many bars that, and I actually enjoy kombucha. I drink it every once in a while. But that are putting it on tap.
Just let I like the bar. No.
It's the craziest thing, and it is the dumbest thing in the world. And I don't understand the guy who is like, hey, I'm going to go to the bar and sit down and drink some kombucha and just jazz out on it and pay more for it because it's at a bar where I could just go to the grocery store like a block away and buy it for like half the price. Like, I don't get it. It's dumb. I hate it as a fad in the bars. I just wish it would go away. It's totally stupid. And I'm fed up.
So I mean, I actually agree with you.
Get over your kombucha at the bar. It's a stupid idea.
I agree with you, Krusty. Kombucha should not be in a bar on tap.
It's so weird.
It's vinegar, basically. You're drinking vinegar.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I mean, it's fermented tea. So.
Fermented tea. Well, the first time I had it.
It has a vinegary taste, basically, but.
Basically, only like real hippied out dudes have I ever had kombucha with.
that's the main people like make it themselves and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I've definitely had that. Yeah. I mean, you know what it makes you do too when you drink kombucha?
Poop.
Yes, to bring it back to Sizzler.
Nice. You know what they should sell on the toilet paper aisle at a grocery store? Kombucha.
And you know what? Poop kombucha with your four rolls for 74 rolls value.
And you know what that reminds me of is the Mariners season versus their playoffs.
And it reminds me of the Seahawks draft.
No.
All right, guys.
Well, that was a good one, guys. I had a good time. We'll talk next time, maybe.
Peace out. Next episode 5 is happening. Episode 5, best moments ever. Seahawks, maybe. Get into a little bit of that.
Definitely.
What a teaser.
That was supposed to be on this one, but we'll do it on the next one.
And maybe sure. since Chiz is getting off the Pete train, we can talk about the overall kind of legacy of Pete, flaws, just overall, where is he going to be in the annals of coaching.
That sounds great. Till next time.
All right, take it easy, guys.
Later.
All right, bye. Peace.